You've built a great podcast. The content's solid. The audience is growing. But the money, still not where it should be. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your podcast for free so you can keep doing your thing while our experienced sales team does their thing, finding advertisers and bringing in revenue. No fees, no stress, just real monetization. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and let us show you the money.
Cuts in on the right foot, launches a golazo!
It's time for Atlanta Soccer Tonight.
Tune in as Jason Longshore gives you insight and analysis on the beautiful game, including headlines from around the world of soccer.
Rebound, goal!
This is Atlanta Soccer Tonight, brought to you by your local Ford dealer and brought to you in part by Michelob Ultra, official beer sponsor of FIFA World Cup 26.
Atlanta Soccer Tonight is on Sports Radio 92.9, The Game. Here's Jason Longshore.
Let's kick it. Atlanta Soccer Tonight is live Sunday, June 21st. Whew, it's been a crazy day at the World Cup. We started here in Atlanta and Spain got going. Lamine Yamal got the start. He got the first goal for Spain in this World Cup. They looked like the contenders that we thought they would be. We'll talk about Spain plenty. Cabo Verde is still unbeaten. They finished 2-2 with Uruguay. That ended about an hour ago. And I'm still trying to catch my breath from that game. That was a crazy, crazy match. And Cabo Verde has a very good chance of getting to the next round. And just remember where you heard that first, ladies and gentlemen. Right now, New Zealand and Egypt are underway. And it is very early in it. It's in the fifth minute. No score yet. Late last night, Japan eliminated Tunisia. Harvey Renard showed up to not be very happy with a team that wasn't very good and a lot of issues there. But Japan looked like a team that could run very deep into this tournament. So lots of things today. Let's try in this opening segment just to get caught up on the basics of what has happened since we spoke last. We signed off last night at 11 p.m., and we've had a lot. So the first game that happened was in Mexico, and it was Japan. It was the 1,000th match in World Cup history. 96 years after game one, this was game 1,000. And Japan was awesome. Daichi Kamada, he scored the fastest goal in Japan's World Cup history, fourth minute. Ayase Ueda added a brace in the 31st and 83rd. Junya Ito, he made it four goals in the 69th. We made it three, and then Ueda added the fourth in the 83rd. 4-0 Japan. Tunisia has a minus eight goal difference. That's not good. They are out. They still have one group match left to play. So Harvey Renard, I guess, got a lot of money to be a babysitter for a little while in this tournament. Sure. Japan's one to watch. I think what's so interesting about Japan is just they're a team that can sit back and absorb pressure. They defend really disciplined and really well, but they can also control the game with the ball. Now, Daichi Kamada, he spoke after the game. He's matched the most goals scored by a Japan player at a single men's World Cup, which is only two. Junichi Inamoto in 2002, Keisuke Honda in 2010, Ritsudon in 2022. So now, and Ueda is now in this conversation as well. So Kamada was asked after the game about Japan's ambitions. And this has always been interesting when we get into these situations with a team that hasn't gone all that deep in World Cup history. You know, what is your ambition? What are they trying to achieve here? And Daichi Kamada said, we really want to win this World Cup. I love that. They play Sweden in the last game in the group stage. They are unbeaten with a win and a draw. They're through to the knockout round. They want to win the group. Now, they are behind the Netherlands on goals scored. Remember, the head-to-head is the first tiebreak. They drew. Then goal differential is the next tiebreak. The Netherlands won 5-1 over Sweden. Japan won 4-0. So the goal differential is the same, but goals scored, the Dutch have scored now seven, and Japan has scored 6. So these are the kind of situations we're going to get into in these last group stage games. Sweden has 3 points. They are on a win 5-1 over Tunisia and a loss 5-1, which is one of the craziest back-to-back results I've ever seen. So Sweden plays Japan. The Netherlands play Tunisia, who's already out. So you would expect that the Dutch will win big. If Japan wants to jump them, they have to beat Sweden by a bigger scoreline. I don't think that's going to happen. So I think Japan's going to come in second in that group. Now, Sweden does need to be careful because they are on 3 points. Their goal differential is 0 because it's 5-1 one way, 5-1 the other way. They got to be careful to not lose too big. And I don't know where that line exactly is at the moment, but you got to watch the goal differential if you're only going to finish on 3 points. And I don't see Sweden beating Japan, although this tournament's been kind of crazy, so I guess anything can happen. Don't want to rule it out completely. I'm not expecting it. So they got to be careful in a situation where both teams that are at the top of the group have an obligation to score goals because they've got to flip the goal differential. Right now, and again, this is before you get into the situation with every team playing 3 games. Right now, the line is 1 point and a -1 goal differential. Ecuador right now is the last team in as a third place team. Czechia, Portugal, New Zealand, all on 1 point as well. New Zealand playing right now. They would actually technically be on 2 in the live table. Portugal played tomorrow, their second game. Panama, Senegal, and Jordan can move up this ladder. They play their second games this week. I think you're going to need 3 points. I don't think anybody's going to get in as a third place team without a win in the tournament. We'll find out. We'll see how it goes. All right, so Japan, good win for them last night. They're in good shape. Belgium, not so much. They have not looked good in this tournament. It was a scoreless draw for them with Iran and Los Angeles. Iran goalkeeper Alireza Benvarnd, he was the star of the night, 7 saves. Benvarnd was outstanding in this, some big saves. Mediterami, he thought he'd open the scoring in the first half with a pretty clever free kick, but it was ruled out for offside. Second half, Maxim de Kuyper looked certain to score for Belgium. Bonnevand pulled a one-handed save at point-blank range. 66th minute, Belgium defender Nathan Ngoy, he was sent off after a bad back pass and then bringing down Taremi in a denial of an obvious goal-scoring opportunity. And it's such a compounding of mistakes. I mean, the back pass, you're going to give Taremi an opportunity to run 40 yards and be 1v1 with the goalkeeper. If you're thinking in that moment, and Thierry Henry talked about this afterwards, and he's 100% correct. If you're able to think, you don't bring the guy down, you trust your goalkeeper, but you sprint and you make it difficult for Taremi. But when you're not thinking because you just made a big mistake, you make a second bigger mistake. And you drag the guy down when you didn't need to. He's 40 yards away. It is going to turn into a goal scoring opportunity. He's the last man. The red card's correct. Ngoy is sent off. Belgium finished the match with 10. They weren't good, period. Didn't really make much of a difference. And Iran is right now with 2 draws in this tournament. They're on top of their group. Belgium is right there with 2 points. It's a group that is not exactly compelling at the moment, but it is right now, those two on 2 points, New Zealand and Egypt, if somebody wins, they have an opportunity to go into first in the group. If they draw, then every game in the group is a draw, and you go into match day 3 with Egypt playing Iran and New Zealand playing Belgium. I'm sure that's happened. I can't remember the last time that's happened off the top of my head. We'll see if somebody can break through in Egypt and New Zealand. Egypt should. They're the better team. But New Zealand has been better in the tournament than they were in the build-up to it. So maybe anything can happen. On the other side of the break, we're going to dig into a couple of games in more specifics. The Spain win here in Atlanta, was in the stadium for that one. Spain did what we've expected them to do. They looked much better. Lamine Yamal was part of that. I think it wasn't the only thing that made Spain better, having Lamine Yamal in from the start, but they were definitely better and they were more dangerous, and the early goal really helped them. And then we'll talk about Cabo Verde. I mean, you have to. This is the Cinderella team of the tournament. Curaçao might try to get some of that Cinderella claim after a draw last night against Ecuador, but Cabo Verde is everybody's darlings right now. We'll talk about that in a full segment coming up. This New Zealand-Egypt game, it is going into the 14th minute. No score in this one. And we'll talk a little U.S. men's national team as well. We still got a little bit of time, and we got to figure out what's the best course of action with Thursday. What are you going to do with this game that you have to play? You're playing a team that's eliminated. You're going to win the group no matter what happens. How do you handle it to continue building momentum and not lose that momentum? We'll talk about all that on the other side of the break. More Atlanta soccer tonight to come on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.
Into the back of the net! Goal!
Back to more of Atlanta soccer tonight
with Jason Longshore.
Atlanta soccer tonight live on 92.9 The Game. 21st minute in New Zealand. Finn Sermon of the Portland Timbers with a header. The Kiwis have the lead over Egypt. Literally just said in the last segment that Egypt should take care of business in this match. We'll see. There's plenty of time. It's the 21st minute. New Zealand's got the lead. All right, let's talk about Spain. I'm sure a lot of you were in the building today. It was a full house for Spain and Saudi Arabia. And the Spanish fans absolutely took over downtown Atlanta. It was very cool going down to South Downtown early. That's where Casa España was based. That's where the Spanish fans gathered before making their way to the stadium. A large number of them, not all of them, because most of the stadium was filled with red jerseys. Some of the variant jerseys as well. I really like the secondary Spanish kit, the kind of cream colored kit with more of a darker red. Really a big fan of that. I saw one person coming out of the stadium wearing today's Heroes jersey, Mikel Oyarzabal. 2 goals and an assist, all in the first 30 minutes. And remember, Oyarzabal didn't get a touch in the first 30 minutes against Cabo Verde. He bounced back in a big way. And it sounds like there was the possibility that he might miss the game due to injury, but was it good to go? And Luis de la Fuente stuck with him. There were a lot of questions about Oyarzabal. There were a lot of questions about a lot of players. De la Fuente did shake up the lineup a bit. I think he got it right. And he had a few things to say afterwards. We'll talk about all that here in this segment. But Spain just, they looked like the team that I thought they were going to be coming in. They looked like a favorite. They beat a team that they should. Saudi Arabia is a fascinating team, and I know a lot of the like deep dive guys on social media who go way deep into tactics and try to codify everything. I think Saudi Arabia is a fascinating team for them because it's hard to like really specify how they play. It's a lot of the ideas of relationism, which is really more about player relationships on the field as opposed to a rigid structure and a rigid shape. It's not quite the opposite of positional play, but in some ways it is. And it can be really difficult to play against, I think, when it works, because there's a lot of things that maybe feel unorthodox, feel unexpected, but it can also fall apart at times. And I think we saw that today in that first half where Saudi Arabia just got stretched very easily by Spain. It wasn't anything too complicated that Spain was doing. There's some things that they did in terms of the player choices that made them better, no doubt. Getting Lamine Yamal on from the start makes them better, no doubt. But Saudi Arabia didn't help themselves today. And this was a team that, remember, played Uruguay to a very difficult first half and then held on a lot in the second half and got a result. So they're still in this. They're on 1 point. Spain is now on 4. Uruguay and Cabo Verde, who we'll talk about in more detail on the other side of the break, they are both on 2 points. So what was different for Spain today? A lot of people have put it strictly down to Lamine Yamal. And look, I get it. You're talking about one of the best players in the world at 18 years old. He's back in the starting lineup for the first time since, it's been almost 2 months exactly, late April, when he started for Barcelona. So about 8 weeks out. He played a little bit on Monday, about, 25 minutes or so when you add in the stoppage time. He had flashes, but he also looked rusty. The first 7, 8, 9 minutes of this game today, it felt like there was a concerted effort to get the ball to Lamine Yamal, which is not a bad strategy. I think at times they were forcing that, and at times he was forcing, trying to make something happen. But that's okay when you're trying to get him going. So I understand it. I don't think it was as pretty as maybe it could have been. I don't think it was quite as effective as it could have been, but I totally get why you do it. Because you get him a goal in the 10th minute. Now, this one is one where the play comes to him. You're not asking him to force something. You're not asking him to go 1v2. You're not asking him to cut inside and find that curling shot that he's generally so good at. It's not quite there. It's not quite back yet. That's okay. You find him, though. He arrived at the right time. And it was great work down the left side. Baena with the through ball. Not really a through ball, kind of the ball, the play Oyarzabal in behind. And he hits the Trivella pass to the backside and picks out Lamine Yamal crashing on the back post. Great ball, great goal, and more than anything, a great start. Because I had this conversation with multiple people today. Spanish fans were very excited. They, I think in general, understood, okay, you start slow. Okay, you're missing Yamal. You're missing Williams to start. You're not quite 100%. You didn't play terribly in that game. I think you do have to give Cabo Verde a good bit of credit. But you were a little disappointed in how that went. But nobody was panicking. I didn't get that sense. Now, I think in the media, there were a lot of negative takes because welcome to the Spanish media. Have you ever heard of a show called El Chiringuito? It's all about takes. It's maybe not the best thing for the discourse of Spanish football. So at times, I think that can creep in. I didn't get a sense of dread or worry this morning, kind of hanging out in South Downtown, seeing Spanish fans. Again, it felt like everybody was very excited for a big day at the stadium. But what I was worried about, and it didn't happen, so we'll never know. What I was worried about was if it takes Spain a while to break through, how would the players react? And maybe more importantly, how would the fans react? Because it felt like a Spanish home game today. So if the fans start to get worried or antsy or concerned, you start to hear the whistles. We heard it a little bit in the game against Cabo Verde. I worried that that would come earlier in this match, and I worried about what the players would do in reaction to it. This is why early goals are important to calm the nerves. The goal from Lamine Yamal settled all that. And then it just felt much more relaxed. Oyarzabal gets 2 goals in pretty quick succession in the 21st and in the 24th. 3 goals in 14 minutes. Then Spain get another one on the other side of halftime. It's an own goal. Cucurella forces it with a good volley. And that's it. So the rest of the second half was just an exercise in finishing things out. It was a really good performance from Spain. They're still building, but they showed you why they're a team you got to watch for. And I think part of that, part of that's Lamine Yamal. I don't have to sit here and tell you how good Lamine Yamal is. Let me tell you a couple other things about how good Spain is. So Oyarzabal, he took a good bit of criticism after the Cabo Verde game. There were a lot of shots taken at him. I think the thing about him that's so interesting, and when you think about the Spanish team, in their best moments. And we're really talking about since 2008 when they won the Euros, 2010 when they won the World Cup, 2012 when they won the Euros again, that era. And they've had good teams since. They won the Euros last time in 24. When you think of Spain at their best, it's not always with a traditional nine. I think Fernando Torres was close to that, but he's also somewhat of a winger playing as a nine with his pace before his knee injury. His pace, he could get in behind, his movement. He didn't solely play central in the spots where you think of a nine only being. It's not a false nine either. Don't get me wrong, and you don't have to put that label on everything. I think you think of Torres, you think of David Villa, again, kind of a converted winger. Mikel Oyarzabal is a converted winger, and he's a guy who's comfortable drifting out wide, but also staying inside. He's a guy who can go find the game. That's Spanish football. That's how they play, and I think he really suits it. And he's been in great form for this team. He didn't have a good first game, but you can't wipe away all the other good things that he's done. I think the criticism was overdone when it came to him. He's the second player on record since 1966 to have three goal involvements in the first 25 minutes of a World Cup match. Only other time that had happened was Laszlo Fazekas of Hungary against El Salvador in 1982. I do not remember Mr. Fazekas. I apologize to all the Hungarian fans out there. The other guy who's done that is Mikel Oyarzabal. I think how Spain broke Saudi Arabia down is important too. It's a 4-2-3-1, essentially. Pedri is very, very free. And we talked about Pedri after the first game. I thought Spain was their best when Pedri got into dangerous spots, when he was in more of a free role. And a lot of times when we talk about a free midfield role, we think of that being a 10. It doesn't have to be. And Pedri is kind of one who shows you this. You've got the base of your midfield locked down with Rodri, Ballon d'Or winner, one of the best in the world to ever play the six. You've got a very interesting player in Dani Olmo. And I was sitting there thinking about how you term this with Olmo and with Pedri, because Pedri's not really a six. He's not really a 10. But he's more than an eight, if that makes sense, because he can do some of the things that a six and an eight can do in those positions. But you can't pigeonhole him, is the way that I kept coming back to. And it's kind of the same with Dani Olmo, who's not a traditional 10. He's not a nine. He's another one of these attackers who doesn't really have a position. And this is becoming more common, by the way, or at least we're recognizing that it's more common and we're finding ways to make it work rather than forcing them into a position that might not suit them. I always remember, and this is a total deep dive. This is what happens on a Sunday night, 2-hour AST. Kenny Cooper, who was a great player in Major League Soccer, U.S. men's national team player as well. You look at him. You see him get off the bus and you think, and he's a goal scorer. So you think he's a nine. He is like the most prototypical nine you could possibly find. But he wasn't. He didn't play like a nine. He played like a winger. He was better out wide. But you see him and you see his size and you see that combination of what he gives you. And you're like, oh, you got to play him as a nine. And everybody did. Occasionally, he'd get to play out wide, and he was better. I think Dani Olmo and Mikel Oyarzabal and Pedri are three guys who are shades of the same kind of thing in different ways. Like Oyarzabal is definitely more of the forward than the three. Olmo is more of the 10 than the three. And Pedri is more of the deep-lying midfield of the three. But none of them fit that stereotype perfectly. This is the brilliance of Luis de la Fuente, and this is, I think, the brilliance of just the Spanish basic model, and every coach interprets it differently, and it can look different depending on the players you have. But I think in general, it's about the ball, and it's about what you do with the ball and how you use the ball to control games. And you find the players their spaces on the field to make it work. And you go back to game one for Spain. I love Fabian Ruiz as a player. At PSG, he's one of the best players in the world. But it didn't fit as well with him and Pedri and Rodri in that three-man midfield. And I remember thinking this watching the game on Monday, talked about it a little bit as well. I thought when Pedri kind of got free between the lines, Spain looked their best. But that's really where Dani Olmo thrives. So Dani Olmo gets the start today. And this is just a fascinating player. And I'm going to have a piece over at soccerdownhere.net about this on the website. And you'll find it at Soccer Down Here on social media, and I'll share it too. He's such a unique player when it comes to a Spanish national team player, because he came up through La Masia. So Barcelona educated in terms of his football. And he did make it. And he went to Dinamo Zagreb. And then he went to RB Leipzig. Two places that maybe Dinamo Zagreb, you could see a little bit of the Spanish style and system. RB Leipzig, not really, not at that time. Although now Hansi Flick coming from Germany to be at Barcelona actually really suits him. And that's why he's back at Barcelona now. But he's added some different elements of his game, and he's not your stereotypical Spanish midfielder. He's hard to put into a box. But he made it work with Rodri, with Oyarzabal, with Pedri. It all looked so much better from there. And then you get Lamine Yamal starting to get sharp again. Spain's bringing it together. After the game, De La Fuente spoke to the media. He said, "I think it's crazy to question this team. We've been unbeaten for 33 consecutive games. You can have better days, worse days, normal days, but questioning, doubting this generation of very young footballers with a bright future, I think it's unfair." I love that he stood up for his players. They rewarded him on his birthday today, by the way. Pretty happy birthday for De La Fuente. Turned 65 today. He became the fourth manager in World Cup history to coach a match on his birthday. None of them have lost. All wins but one draw. Spain moves to first on 4 points. They sit alone on top of Group H, and they look like the team that we thought they could be coming into the tournament, an absolute contender. On the other side of the break, we're going to talk about a team that looks nothing like the team that most people thought they were going to be coming into the tournament, Cabo Verde. How are they doing this? What happened tonight? And can they keep doing this? We'll talk about it on the other side of the break on Atlanta Soccer tonight on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.
It is not hard to destroy a college. Last season, the podcast Campus Files brought you stories of fraternity drug rings, stolen body parts, campus cults, and more.
And now Campus Files is back for another season.
There's a guy screaming into his phone. He's like, "I just saw Charlie Kirk get assassinated right in front of me."
Every week is a new episode and a new story.
It was so chaotic.
It's almost like a university under siege.
Listen to and follow Campus Files, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Soccer on the world stage, and Jason Longshore has it all covered
with Atlanta Soccer Tonight.
Welcome back, Atlanta Soccer Tonight, live on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. I'm Jason Longshore. New Zealand still up 1-0 on Egypt, 42nd minute, almost into the 43rd. New Zealand would go to the top of their group. I did not have that on my bingo card. I had Cabo Verde on my bingo card. I told you before the tournament, I said this at a Soccer Down Here live show where I made my picks, and they stayed consistent when we did our preview the day before the tournament. I said Cabo Verde would get out of the group. I thought that would come via losing narrowly to Spain and to Uruguay and beating Saudi Arabia. Well, they haven't lost yet, and they haven't played Saudi Arabia yet. Cabo Verde is the story of the tournament. Just no way around it. That kept going in Miami tonight. First ever World Cup. They qualified last October. Third smallest nation by population ever to reach the tournament. Their opener was the draw here in Atlanta. Like, Atlanta's always going to be part of Cabo Verde's history because of their first game. Vozinha became a household name with that performance. Somehow, they topped that debut tonight because they had to battle and fight against one of the feistiest teams in the world in Uruguay. Cabo Verde scored first. They got a free kick, 21st minute. And Kevin Pina stepped up from, 30 yards out. Two-man wall. The wall did not do its job. But Pina hit a low drive kind of knuckleball. He came across it just a little bit. Very difficult for the goalkeeper to see. Again, because it gets through the wall. And that's a problem. But for Pina to hit it that well and beat the goalkeeper from that far out, even with it getting through the wall. That's your first ever World Cup goal for Cabo Verde. And Pina himself is such a special story. So we've talked a little bit about Cabo Verde and the diaspora and how they've built this program. We've talked about it with Pico Lopez, for example, recruited on LinkedIn. He's played his whole career in Ireland, where he was raised. But he qualified to play for Cabo Verde. He got a message in Portuguese on his LinkedIn. He thought it was spam. He didn't answer it. 9 months later, he's like, oh, it's in English now. And I would like to do that. He was big tonight. But you have the Cabo Verdean diaspora all over. And Brockton, Massachusetts is a big part of that. About 16,000 of Brockton, Massachusetts residents have roots in Cabo Verde. So during part of his childhood, Kevin Pina was one of them. He immigrated to Brockton with his family, kind of gave up on playing soccer. He didn't look like he was going to make it through. It just didn't seem to happen for him. And he played for local clubs when he lived in Cabo Verde younger. Didn't really make it further than that. Moved to Brockton. And a former national team player, the winger Kalo, he was a former captain. He played alongside the current manager, Bubista. Kalo saw Pina playing in Brockton, Massachusetts. And he went to Pina's father and convinced him to return to Cabo Verde to play. He ended up in Portugal for a minute. Didn't get a contract with Benfica. Went to the third division in Portugal. He's 21 years old at this point and playing in Anadia, a third division team in Portugal. He bounced around the Portuguese third division and finally got at least an opportunity to play consistently. He wasn't even getting a chance to play in the Portuguese third division. Finally got a chance. He was part of a team at Chaves who got promoted to the first division. He got noticed. He got seen. He was playing consistently. He got a transfer to Krasnodar, got a call up to the Cabo Verde national team, playing in Russia, became a starter, was part of their strong showing in the 2024 African Cup of Nations. But he spent time in Brockton, Massachusetts, and that's where he was seen by the person who would put him on the radar of the Cabo Verde national team. And he's the one, Kevin Pina, who scores Cabo Verde's first ever goal in a World Cup. It wasn't that simple for Cabo Verde tonight, though. Maxi Araújo, he pounced on a rebound, headed home an equalizer in the 44th minute. Then deep in first half stoppage time, Agustin Canobio, he put Uruguay up 2-1. I didn't think they were going to come back. I mean, just look, you're talking about a team that's never played in a World Cup before. You had the lead. Extremely emotional after that goal. You give up a goal that's an equalizer, then extremely emotional the other way, and you could see it. And you give up the second goal, and it's a mess. You had halftime. Usually, those goals right before halftime are so hard to come back from. They didn't fold. they kept going. Helio Varela, he comes on as a substitute and within 2 minutes leveled it at two. It was a loose ball from Matias Oliveira, back pass to the goalkeeper Muslera. He's in no man's land, and Varela puts it into the open net. That makes it 2-2. Cabo Verde had chances to win late. Uruguay had more chances to win late. Neither one could. So it finishes 2-2. So Cabo Verde unbeaten in their World Cup history in two matches. Uruguay, two draws as well. Uruguay plays Spain in game three. That's going to be very difficult, and they've got to get a result. They've got to at least get a draw. I don't know. And again, it's way too early to tell what the third place things are going to do. All of your projections coming into the tournament were that 4 points, no problem. You're definitely going to go in as a third place qualifier. 3 points if you had a goal differential of -2 or better, you would go through. That was kind of where the line looked like it would be in all the mathematical models and projections and simulations and all that. Right now, it's looking like the line might be lower. I don't think 2 points is going to be enough. I think you've got to have three. But if these groups continue like this, maybe. So Uruguay has a shot. Cabo Verde plays Saudi Arabia. Now, the Saudis, remember, they drew with Uruguay in game one and then got blown out in the first half tonight to Spain. How are they going to come back from that? They're a very unpredictable team. I think Cabo Verde can defend them fine, but Cabo Verde's got to go find some goals. And that's the nature of this team. That's the nature of a team at this level. Bubista and what he's doing as a manager, you got to give him a ton of credit for what he is doing, because I think good defensive teams, you have to give the coach more credit there. And this isn't to say that they don't impact a team's offense. They do. There's a lot of patterns. There's a lot of structure that can help. There's a lot of player selection, a lot of finding the right chemistry. There's a lot of things the coach has to do on that side. But the attacking side of the team, to me, leans more to the players and the quality. The defensive side of the team can lean more to the coaching. And Bubista has done an amazing job. And when you look at Cabo Verde and Ali Howorth, who is a great follow on the African game, highly recommended, Howorth97 on X. He posted this just a little bit ago, and I think this is essential to know about him, and this is why I picked them to get out of the group stage. In 14 group matches in major international tournaments, so this is including the African Cup of Nations, in 14 games, Cabo Verde has only lost one time. Only once in 2013 did they fail to get out of the group. At that tournament, they drew all three games. They didn't lose, but it wasn't enough to get out of the group. If they draw with Saudi Arabia, they'll get through. They'd be on 3 points. Their goal differential would be zero. They will go through if they draw with Saudi Arabia. They can win. They can win that game. Cabo Verde can absolutely be dreaming right now. It's amazing. It's just an amazing story. I mean, just seeing everything with this game, Fosinha's mother in the stands. The fans were amazing in Miami. This is the first team to avoid defeat in each of their first two games at a World Cup ever since Senegal in 2002. That Senegal team went to the quarterfinals. Here's the other thing about Cabo Verde, and we talked about this after the game Monday. They committed one foul against Spain. And they had to defend a lot against Spain. One foul. That's it. Today, four fouls. So they've only committed five in total. To be able to defend as much as they have against Spain and against Uruguay and not have to resort to fouls. Again, it's a sign of a great coach. It's the sign of a great coaching job. And Cabo Verde is a team to watch in this next round of games. I think they'll beat Saudi Arabia. And this is just going into hypothetical land, if they beat Saudi Arabia by more than if Uruguay was to beat Spain, Spain could go in as the third place team and Cabo Verde could win the group. I don't think that's going to happen. I'm really watching Uruguay and what their game looks like against Spain. I think they're the ones that could end up being the surprise elimination out of this group. Marcelo Bielsa, after the game, he kept it short, but he was pretty blunt, as he usually is. He said, "We relinquished the leading role when it would have been more convenient to maintain pressure on the opponent, and the gap narrowed. When we ceded control, the opponent showed things we were capable of preventing." He talked about Federico Valverde and how he can play anywhere across the front line. He said, "We need to win, and with one game left, you know, that's what it comes down to for them. They can't guarantee they go through with a draw, although I think it would be enough. They need to win. They have not shown they're capable of it." And here's your last bit of trivia on Uruguay. They have not won a World Cup match without Luis Suarez in the starting lineup. And he's not in this team. He was in a box in Miami watching the game with family. The last time they won a World Cup match without him in the starting lineup was 1990. They beat South Korea 1-0 in Italy. 10 World Cup matches since 1990 that he did not start. 0 wins, 4 draws, 6 losses. Is it a curse? I don't know. I don't think he's Danhausen, but I'm not putting anything past Luis Suarez. Where does this stand for Group H? Cabo Verde on 2 points. Uruguay on 2 points. Saudi Arabia on 1 point. Spain on 4 points. Saudi Arabia, Cabo Verde in Houston on June 26th. Same time, Spain and Uruguay in Guadalajara on June 26th. We'll see. Spain gets going in this set of games today. Cabo Verde, they're not going anywhere yet. And this group, which I thought had potential to be a little chaotic, is one of the most interesting in the World Cup. And this is what we love about this tournament, right? All right, when we come back, we're going to talk about Lionel Messi. The Ultimo Tango will continue for him tomorrow, 1 o'clock kick against Austria. Didier Deschamps, he chases a second World Cup title as a manager, and there's a little bit of an injury worry for France. And Erling Haaland and Norway back on the field tomorrow. Really interesting game with Senegal. We'll talk about tomorrow's matches on the other side of the break on AST on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.
Now back to our look at the world of soccer.
And Jason Longshore has it all covered.
This is Atlanta Soccer Tonight.
Hour number two, Atlanta Soccer Tonight, live on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. I'm Jason Longshore. So many things going on in this World Cup. It is a lot to keep up with. Spain looking like a team that can win it again after not looking like that in game one. Cabo Verde looking like a team that can get to the knockout rounds. New Zealand looking like a team that can get to the knockout rounds. They lead Egypt at halftime. Finn Sermon of the Portland Timbers with the goal. It's 1-0 New Zealand. We'll talk about that one through the second half and see if Egypt can turn it. Belgium not looking like a team that is a threat at the moment. Portugal didn't in game one. We'll see how they look in game two. Argentina is looking like a team that is a threat. They are the defending champions. They play tomorrow, 1 o'clock, in a really interesting game. This is against Austria. It's going to be in Dallas. So not going to be in the heat for a 1 o'clock kick. That's a good thing here. Lionel Messi will be happy. Argentina looked great in their 3-0 win over Algeria. They looked like themselves. They looked confident. They handled the game that was in front of them. And they looked like one of the best teams in the tournament right now. Lionel Messi looked like one of the best players in the tournament. Austria opened their run with a 3-1 win over Jordan, Jordan's first ever World Cup game. Ralf Rangnick, he's the manager of Austria. He is one of the architects of Red Bull style soccer, the pressing model, the pressing idea. He's been able at the national team level, which this isn't easy to do. I think generally at the national team level, you have to keep things simpler because you don't get a lot of time with these players. We've had this conversation when it comes down to U.S. men's national team coaches and what you want to see and who you want to hire. And a lot of times people judge it on like, well, I like the way this coach plays, or they do this at the club level. And I think Greg Berhalter had to figure this out, and it took him a minute, and then he did. I think Mauricio Pochettino maybe had to figure this out. It took him a minute, and he did. Rangnick generally has been able to have the team look like a Ralph Rangnick team. Proactive, high tempo, intense pressing, immediate counter pressing to win the ball back. Everything is vertical. Everything is fast. You're not really big into buildup. You're not trying to really keep a lot of possession if you're a Ralph Rangnick kind of player. It is about pressure. And this team with Austria looks like a Ralph Rangnick kind of team. It does. And that's so hard to do at the national team level. So when you look at it and you look at that kind of style against an Argentina team that is older, that isn't the fastest, but is extremely technical, it's a clash of styles, and I'm really intrigued by it. Rangnick, when he was asked about what he's up against, he said, let's talk about the weaknesses. There are none, not that we were able to observe. Their strengths, they are outstanding. Obviously, they have the greatest player of all time in their team, so we have to show we're one of the best teams at this World Cup. Can they play their best game since he took over Austria? They're going to need to, I think. They're a team that I think will get out of the group. But this is a huge test for them. And it's okay that it's the second game. I'm always of the opinion, especially when you are a team like Austria that hasn't been to the World Cup in a long time, you're trying to prove yourself. I'm always of the opinion you want your toughest game first. I think you more than anything, you don't want it last. So the fact that Austria has gotten a win, that should put them into the next round. Good win, 3-1 win. Now you get a game that if you don't win, it's not going to ruin your tournament. If you get a result out of it, then you're absolutely going to the next round and the momentum continues to build. But if you don't get a result, if you lose, you have the opportunity to learn something about what it is that wins this tournament, because Argentina is the defending champions. They've won the last two Copa Americas. They've won the last World Cup. Until somebody knocks them off, they're the man. Somebody has to find a way to beat this Argentina team. Can Austria? They're capable. I don't think they do. And just a lot of this, and this is how I see World Cups, and I think you have to just because of the history. It's almost like I have to see it before I believe you can do it. And Argentina went through this. I think Brazil has fallen into this now, which is not where Brazil used to be. Brazil, it used to be that yellow shirt comes out and you're like, they're going to win the tournament. That's just what they're going to do. They win the tournament. Now it's like, I need to see that you can look like that team. I think there's a few teams that have looked like that team in this tournament. Argentina is one of them. Spain today. France in the second half of their first game. The first half, they did not look like that. Germany in the majority of their game against Curaçao and the closing stages of their comeback win against Cote d'Ivoire, they've shown they've got what it takes. England in the second half of their game against Croatia, they've shown. Argentina's the one who did it for the longest period of time in one match. I think they're going to handle their business against Austria. We'll find out tomorrow. Then we get a little bit of a break. It's not a 1 o'clock game and then a 4 o'clock game. It's a 1 o'clock game and a 5 o'clock game. So you get an extended late afternoon and then a really interesting one with France and Iraq. So France, I mentioned it, not a great first half against Senegal, a great second half. Kylian Mbappe with two goals in that. Didier Deschamps, He is leaving the French national team at the end of this tournament. A lot of reports that Zinedine Zidane is going to be the manager. The concern point for France in this match is Aurélien Tchouaméni was absent from training today. No official word on anything. The reports broke, honestly, a little while ago from French media. So we'll have to see if it's just something precautionary, if there's a serious issue here, it's just something minor, or, you know, he just left training early and he'll be fine to play tomorrow. We don't know yet. So Aurélien Tchouaméni, keep that in mind. I talked about it coming into the tournament. There's been a lot of whispers and things about France. I think there's a lot of unease in the French media and the fan base. And that first half didn't help any of that. But the second half did. Kylian Mbappe showed his quality. Can he do it again? He should against Iraq. This is a team that France is much better than. Iraq, I think, will struggle to stay in this game. France should be able to get through it, even not getting into top gear. Mbappe spoke to the media today. The game tomorrow is his 100th cap for France at 27 years old. He's on 14 career World Cup goals, two behind the all-time record that Miroslav Klose and Lionel Messi have jointly now. Mbappe was asked about Major League Soccer at the press conference, and he said, "I've always loved this culture where ambitions are limitless. If David asks me if I want to come, we will see." He's talking about David Beckham, of course. Oh, is Mbappe going to be the one who replaces Messi in Miami? Is that what's going to happen? I don't know. That'd be interesting. Mbappe's a fascinating one. Like, there's not another Messi right now, currently, that would have the same impact on Major League Soccer that he has had. There's just not another one. Like, Beckham was one of one when he came to MLS. Messi is one of one. I mean, as much as a lot of people love Cristiano Ronaldo, it's not the same. He wouldn't have that same reaction. I don't think Mbappe would either. I think Mbappe would have more of a reaction, honestly, than Thierry Henry did when he came to New York. And he had a good reaction. I don't think Henry crossed over into the mainstream at that time, like Messi has, even without speaking English. Beckham obviously loved the mainstream, and the mainstream loved Beckham, so that was easy. I mean, had him on Good Morning America, you know? He loved that stuff. So, would Mbappe, would he cross over? Maybe Mbappe, if he came to MLS, and it depends on when, you know, if he comes closer to 30 than further away from 30, I think we're having a different conversation. I think Mbappe could have more of an impact than Zlatan did. And I think Zlatan tried to do the celebrity thing and maybe still trying to do it being on the Fox pregames. I don't think he really crossed over, like really, truly crossed over like Messi has, like Beckham has, like Pelé did back in the day. Mbappe would be fascinating to see if he came here and what it would look like. I don't really know where I would slot him in on how much of an impact he would have on the league. Love to see it. Would absolutely love to see it. He was also asked about the hydration break, and it's that topic. I've said it before. I am not a hater of the hydration breaks. I do not like TV networks going to commercials during them, but I'm not a hater of the hydration breaks. Yes, it is a change. Yes, it is something that coaches have to adjust to. I think good coaches do. Yes, it does change the momentum of a match in terms of the flow. No, Gustavo Alfaro and Marcelo Bielsa, it is not a different sport. Stop. That's so over the top. Stop. That's performative. It changes it. Kylian Mbappe, he was asked about it. He said, "If my team's dominating, it disrupts the rhythm. If it's hot, I'm happy." He's like, "You shouldn't ask the players for their opinion because they'll change their minds constantly." I would say the same about the coaches as well. Because if you ask some of the coaches who were under momentum, like really struggling, and the hydration break helped them, they might say they actually like it. The ones who feel like, "Oh, we lost our momentum during the hydration break," they're going to be the ones who are going to complain about it. Also, the ones who maybe things aren't going as well for them are going to complain about it too. So, Yeah, it's going to continue to be a talking point, but the fans will then immediately start singing Country Roads when they stop booing. So maybe that's the solution. I don't know. Norway tomorrow, 8 o'clock, they play Senegal. I'm looking forward to this game. This could be an interesting one. It's going to go final right before we start tomorrow at 10 o'clock. Erling Haaland with 2 goals in his first World Cup match, a 4-1 win over Iraq. Senegal, they outplayed France in the first 45. They then got blown out in the second 45. Pape Thiaw, the manager for Senegal, he was blunt. He said, our goal is to go as far as possible in this competition. He takes full responsibility for that second half against France. He's like, we have 2 matches left and we no longer have much room for error. This is the game of the day for sure tomorrow. And this is the game where I think Senegal has to get something out of it. They play Iraq in the final game, and you would think they're going to get 3 points there, which might be enough to get them through. You're going to want to get at least a draw here against Norway. And Norway is another one of those teams in that list of you got to continue to show it, because we haven't seen you at a World Cup in a long time. They showed it against a weak opponent in game one. This is a real test for Norway. 8 o'clock tomorrow at MetLife Stadium in New Jersey. Last one tomorrow, Jordan and Algeria. Both teams trying to bounce back after somewhat lopsided losses in their first openers. Jordan 3-1 lost to Austria. Algeria 3-0 lost to Argentina. Jordan coach Jamal Salami, he said that his players are over the nerves of that debut. He said, we know that the fear of the opener is behind us now. The players are more trusting in their abilities. They also know that they have to play Argentina in game 3. This is massive for them against Algeria. They have to get something out of it. Algeria is a good team. They're going to be favored here. They should win this match, and they should be fine to get to the knockout round. Should being the key word in all that. Jordan, I saw them in the pre-tournament buildup. I did not think they would get a result in this tournament. I thought Algeria would perform better than they did against Argentina. We'll see where both of their levels are, but I think Algeria will win comfortably tomorrow night. That one's in Santa Clara at 11 o'clock. All right, coming up next, what have the first 10 days of this World Cup actually told us? We'll talk about some of the data. We'll talk about some of the trends. We'll talk about some of the new patterns, all coming up in the What's on Tap segment after the break on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.
Why does it feel like nobody really gives us the inside scoop? Join us on The Powers That Be, the podcast where insiders from Puck break down who has influence, how they use it, and what it actually means for you. New episodes every weekday. Listen to The Powers That Be wherever you get your podcasts.
Into the back of the net! Goal!
Back to more of Atlanta Soccer Tonight
with Jason Longshore.
Welcome back, Atlanta Soccer Tonight. Live on 92.9 The Game in the Odyssey app. I don't know why talking about trends brings us the Darth Vader theme, but I will take it. This is going to be an interesting segment already. I can see it coming. I have been fascinated by some of the things that we're starting to see in this tournament play out. And there's a lot of tactical stuff that is starting to trend. The hydration breaks are a topic, and a real topic, not just the I don't like them because there's a commercial during it on some networks, or I don't like it because it's new. There's conversations to be had about all this. I think there's some really good conversations to be had about some of the other rules that have been brought in, trying to keep more playing time happening. We're seeing that. The ball's in play more. And that's been a huge issue at times for the game. And I think at World Cups especially, because there's so much on the line. And I get it. You're going to do everything possible to get a result in a World Cup match. I understand it. Yes, I'm a Diego Maradona fan. He punched a ball in 1986 before you had video replay. So, yeah, you're going to do whatever it takes to win these games. I understand that. I understand dark arts in the game. We've talked about this throughout Atlanta United's history of wasting time when you need to waste time. Trying to draw a foul, trying to draw a penalty. The difference between having contact and going down rather than trying to keep your balance and flat out diving. There's so many different layers to it. But I think what FIFA has done that I really like, one, they are speeding up goal kicks. They are speeding up throw-ins. They are speeding up substitutions. These are three easy things that you can speed up. And the system that they're using is very good. The referee isn't like doing a stopwatch every time the ball goes out of play. The referee is saying, all right, I see you are blatantly trying to slow the game down. You got 5 seconds. And they hold their hand up and they count it down. We haven't seen that turn possession over very often, which is good. It's doing its job. I think when we talk about what happened to Miguel Almiron, that's another trend and change in the game that I think is for the good. And I disagree, and we talked about it last night, but I disagree with some of the things that we've heard, because it's the complete opposite of what we said when Gianluca Prestiani said slurs to Vinicius Jr. in the Champions League last year. And because he covered his mouth, we didn't know what he said. So you couldn't really punish him because it's you had no definitive evidence. So FIFA said, all right, if you are going to say something that you feel is bad enough to cover your mouth when you say it to an opponent, we're going to send you off. We don't know what Miguel Almiron said. One of the jokes was he should have said something in Guarani, which is a native Paraguayan language that nobody outside of Paraguay would understand. If he had said that, I don't think anybody would have even read his lips. But Miguel Almiron broke the rule. He covered his mouth and he said something in a confrontational manner to an opponent. That's a red card. That's the rule. Those are all good things that have come in this tournament. What are some other things that we have learned so far through 10 days? The hosts, pretty good. Mexico, 2 wins out of 2. United States, 2 wins out of 2. Canada, unbeaten, 1 win and a draw. All are going to go to the knockout round. 2 have won their group already. We'll see about Canada. They play Switzerland in the last game in the group stage. None of them have lost yet. And we weren't too concerned. I mean, there were the usual concerns from U.S. fans and U.S. soccer media about how the U.S. would do, but I don't think anybody was concerned about them being bad in this tournament. Mexico, there was a decent bit of concern coming in as well. They've been better than expected. It's absolutely fine to say the U.S. has been better than expected. Canada has been far better than expected. I didn't think they would beat anybody 6-0. Now, Qatar is very much not good. Egypt have just taken the lead 2-1. They've come all the way back. Mo Salah gets the goal, really well-played goal. And Egypt gets to where we thought they would at the start of this night. It's 68th minute. Egypt's up 2-1. So trend is looking like they're going to be leading the group at the end of the night. And they should be with what we've seen from Belgium. Belgium just hasn't been good enough. We have seen a few favorites not be good enough. Portugal was in this conversation. Spain was until today. Portugal's the next one, along with Belgium, that it's like, okay, are we ever going to see this out of you? We'll find out. But the U.S. has been very good. Mexico has been very good. Canada has been good. All could win their group, which would be a huge statement for CONCACAF and just soccer in this region. Another trend, we talked about it with Austria, the teams that are pressing. Spain has the most high-intensity pressures in the attacking half right now, 321. Not a massive shock. We'll see about Austria after they play 2 games, if they're high up in this conversation. But Spain has 321. Second, United States, 300. And that is huge. And that is a trend that we have seen building under Mauricio Pochettino of a team that is very hard to play through. To me, I think it's so important when you are a team that is good, but you can't out-talent people like an Argentina can, like a France can, like an England, like a Spain, I think to a point, although maybe not quite as much, because I think they have some underpinnings in their structure. They have a nice combination of both if they're able to press so high and be effective with it and be very talented. But I think if you're a team like the U.S., that it is fair to say that you're somewhere between 15 and 20 in talent out of the world. You got to find a way to make up that gap. And you got to find something that you can do all the time. Because if you're a team that is 15 or 20 in the world, and you go up against a team that's worse than you, okay, you can out-talent them. You can play to your strengths. You can play the game you want to play. You can just beat them. And this was always the thing for the U.S., is you would do that against teams in CONCACAF. And then you'd play a better team in a knockout game, or like a Mexico in Mexico City, or in Copa America. You'd play somebody very difficult, and you didn't have something that you could do all the time. This is going to sound like a crazy comparison, but just go with me. So, pro wrestling. I'm a pro wrestling fan. I'm not as hardcore about it as I used to be, but I am. I keep up with what's going on. Finishing moves. You have to have, to be, I think, one of the best, you have to have a finishing move you can do on everybody, because you're going to go up against some people who are bigger than you. And if you can't lift them in the way to do your finishing move, or to manipulate them or move them or whatever, you just can't do it on that person. Like, how do you book the match to make it work if you can't do your finishing move on that person? You can't. That's why the Stone Cold Stunner is one of the most popular finishing moves of all time, because you can kick anybody in the gut and then you can drop their chin on your shoulder and boom, they're out. All right. You can press anybody. You might not be as effective against some teams for sure, but you can control being a team that has high intensity pressures in the attacking half. And the U.S. is doing that against teams that they could just sit back and out talent. But to make it be a trend, to make it be a style, to make it be a tactical thing that you build around, part of your game model, you got to do it against everybody. And they're doing that. And they're doing it very well. And they will attempt to do that against better teams. And you're going to have to be good enough in those moments to not get played through. And if you do, then you got to realize that, hey, now it's time for plan B. But this is something that you can replicate. And that's the key. I really like that Pochettino has built a team around that, because that is easier to replicate than Christian Pulisic doing something amazing against a player that might be better than him. And you're going to run into those defenders the later you go in this tournament. Cabo Verde, we've talked about it throughout, the performances that they have had. And I think today we saw something in terms of trend that maybe they can scale up a little bit. I knew they'd be good defensively. I didn't think they would get a draw in a game where they conceded twice. I didn't think that would happen. They showed a few moments against Spain, but not many. This is a team that looked pretty good going forward against Uruguay. I was impressed. They should be able to beat Saudi Arabia, but they might be dangerous enough in that counter to be able to hurt some teams in a knockout round. It's going to be interesting. Belgium, the trend is bad, really bad. 23 shots today, no goals. That's the most that they have, most shots they've taken in a World Cup match since 1994, when they played Saudi Arabia and had 28 and didn't score. Belgium have had almost 70 shots in World Cup matches without a goal, going back to their Canada match in 2022. 3.5 years. Since they scored in the World Cup, the last World Cup, but almost 70 shots and no goals. And they do have a goal in the tournament, but it's an own goal. That doesn't count. That's not what we're talking about. A goal by one of their players, a goal from open play, not an own goal. Yeah, you got to create own goals sometimes, but Belgium's got to find a way to score some goals. Couple other things that are interesting. The substitutes. After the Cabo Verde equalizer tonight from Helio Varela, there have been 23 goals scored by substitutes at this tournament. Only 2014 with 32 and 2022 with 30 have produced more sub goals at an entire World Cup. You're only 10 days in. We're still going for like a month. We got 4 more weeks. Yeah, the new 5 sub rule is part of this. The heat, which we talked about coming in, was going to affect teams, although it hasn't been crazy. the expanded benches. I think there's different things for it. And yeah, maybe the water breaks are factored into this. I don't think they are so much in the substitutes. I think it's down to the overall depth. I think it's down to the heat. I think it's down to the fatigue that a lot of players have had in their club season. Late goals are a thing. Late goals from substitutes are a big thing. Responses are another. We have seen a lot of teams come back in this tournament. This one with New Zealand and Egypt, and they're in the second half hydration break right now, 75th minute. Egypt are up 2-1. We have not seen many teams fall behind and come back to win. It's happened twice. This would be the third one if it's happened. We have seen teams fall behind and come back to draw. Cabo Verde, Uruguay, it went both ways. The Blue Sharks scored first. Uruguay came back to take the lead, go from 1-0 down to 2-1 up, and then Cabo Verde came back to tie that. But this would be the third one if Egypt can do this, to give up the first goal and come back to win. The substitution, the goals from substitutes, the late goals are changing results, but they're not changing winners as much as you might think. But when you get to the knockout round, that could be enough to send you to extra time. That could be enough to send you to penalties, and everything starts to change a little bit. So those are a few of your trends that we're seeing so far. The hydration breaks. Yeah. I mean, what I'll say about it in terms of trend is it can break up momentum, just like teams flopping to try to break a team's momentum when a team is outplaying them in a match, which we've seen for years. I'd rather have a hydration break, to be perfectly honest. There are plenty of ways you can break up a team's momentum, and momentum swings happen in games all the time. I think it's disingenuous to say that they never happen and that you want the game to be all the same throughout 45 minutes of a half. No, games are up and down. Hydration breaks maybe force that to be a little more up and down, which, again, as I've said throughout this tournament, I think the tournament's been a lot of fun. I think the tournament's been played at a high level, and I think the hydration breaks are a part of why it's been played at such a high level. And there's been a lot of goals, and there's been a lot of just good soccer in this tournament. We'll see if that continues as we keep going. A lot of big games this week. But coming up next, it's the 3-4-3. Three standout performers, four headlines, and three things that have made me smile about this game as of late. All that's coming up to wrap up this edition of AST after the break on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.
And now, we end the night with a bit of structure.
Shot! Goal! Goal! Goal!
Let's get the formation set. It's the 3-4-3 on Atlanta Soccer Tonight.
Welcome back. Final segment of this Atlanta Soccer Tonight World Cup edition. Been at this since May 31st. We've got another month to go, but we'll take you all the way up to the World Cup final on July 19th every night. This week, we'll be live at 10 o'clock Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and then Thursday, we will be live at the Harvey in Chamblee for U.S. Men's National Team pregame from 8 to 10. The game, the result is meaningless. We'll have a lot to talk about on that one, about what to expect from the U.S., what to watch for, what we want to see them do in that match, and really start to look ahead to what the round of 32 is going to look like on July 1st. But this is the 3-4-3. It's brought to you by Ford. Visit your local Ford dealer. Three standout performers from the day, four headlines, and three things that make me smile. Let's start with the standouts. Mikel Oyarzabal from Spain. Two goals and an assist in the first 24 minutes of this one. Second player on record since 1966 to have three goal involvements in the first 25 minutes of a World Cup match. He didn't have a touch in the first 30 minutes in game one. He's a player who's going to be big for Spain because he's so multifaceted. And yeah, Lamine Yamal coming back is a big part of what Spain did today. Dani Olmo, I think, was a huge part of just making everything fit. But Mikel Oyarzabal is a player that maybe doesn't get talked about enough because he doesn't play for Barcelona or Real Madrid. But he could be one of the most important players that Spain has. If he plays like he did today, he absolutely will be that. Number two on standout performers, Helio Varela, the Cabo Verde substitute who came off the bench and leveled the match within 2 minutes at 2-2 in the 60th minute. That keeps Cabo Verde unbeaten through two World Cup matches. Mentioned the substitute goal trend that we're starting to see, but the Cabo Verde trend, this is a team that is just really difficult to beat. This is a strong group, the Blue Sharks, and they have every chance in the world to get out of this group and get into the knockout round in their first World Cup. Number three on standout performers, Alireza Berinvand, the goalkeeper for Iran. Seven saves. Second straight draw for Iran. They are, until this game goes final, top spot in Group G. Egypt will be in the top spot when this one's over. It's 3-1 Egypt now in the 85th minute. But Iran have an absolutely solid chance to get out of the group stage. Now, it's not going to be easy for them, but they have that opportunity. This is a team that has really been a surprise, because while I think some of the things that have been said in terms of how difficult things have been for them are maybe a little overstated, and I think their manager's playing into it a little bit, because he can say anything right now and it's going to be questioned, which I totally understand. But the idea, I think he said today or yesterday leading up to this game, that the other managers in the tournament have shunned him. The other managers in the tournament aren't hanging out. There's nowhere for him to hang out. Teams are spread all over the continent. So, I mean, unless there's a secret WhatsApp group that he didn't get an invite to, I don't know. There's a lot of things that have been really frustrating about how this whole situation has gone. It has made it a little more difficult for Iran than it should have been. I think there are a few things that are getting overstated as well. So on the field, this has been a really good team, and they have every shot to get to the knockout round. Their goalkeeper, Berinvand, is a big part of that. Four headlines from all over the tournament. Number one, Tunisia, they are out. They've had two different managers. Doesn't matter. They lost 5-1 and they lost 4-0. They are going home. It is a very disappointing World Cup for them. They are a national team and a federation that overreacts to everything. One of their players spoke after the loss last night about how the Japan team that they played and lost to has been really consistent over the years. I think they played each other in a friendly tournament, the Kirin Cup, that Japan organizes. And he's like, their roster is basically the same. Ours is completely different. You know, you bring in a manager a few months before the tournament, then you fire him after one loss. The constant stopping and starting doesn't help. Yeah, there's issues at times with the African countries, and Cabo Verde's dealt with this as well. There's times with funding, there's times with revenue, there's times where all of that factors in and makes things more difficult. I think some of Tunisia's issues, from everything that I've read and what, you know, their players were saying after the game last night, it's not about resources, it's about decisions. You have to let managers have time, and you can't, I mean, I don't know what's going to happen to Harvey Renard at this point, but you can't keep changing managers all the time and expect it to work. That just doesn't happen, especially at the national team level. Number two on the headlines, with his goal tonight in the 67th minute against New Zealand, Mo Salah is now Egypt's all-time World Cup goal scorer with three. Four games, he has three goals. He is the all-time leading scorer for Egypt. They're trying to get to the knockout round for the first time. We've got a lot of those stories. I mean, that would be another trend, is teams making it to the knockout round for the first time. Canada is going to be one of those. Cabo Verde could be one, because they've never been here before. Scotland could be one. They played Brazil in the last game, but if they don't lose badly, I think they get through as a third place team. Egypt is one. Iran is one. Those are two who have never made it to the knockout round. So you could have some new faces in the knockout round for sure. Number three on the headlines, I mentioned it a little bit earlier, Kylian Mbappe keeping the door open to Major League Soccer. And yeah, I mean, he said if David Beckham asks him, then he would see. But that's a pretty big statement to make in a press conference right now about, yeah, I would consider it. It's good for MLS. It's a good thing. I mean, he didn't say he's coming tomorrow, but it's a good thing that he was very positive in how he talked about it. I like that. And I'm happy that he did. I'd be fascinated if it happened. I wonder what the reaction would be nationally, because in our soccer bubble, and a lot of times we do retreat to that bubble and we think of things only in that bubble. He's obviously one of the best players to ever play the game. He'll be the all-time leading World Cup goal scorer before his career's done. In the mainstream bubble, which is still what you have to look at to grow the game, does he move the needle? I think he does. I think he's known. And I think some of that is just down to soccer players are more well-known than they used to be. But I think he is pretty well-known by your average sports fan. So I think it could go well. It's not Lionel Messi well. It could be on the field Lionel Messi well for MLS. Off the field, it's not going to be at that level, because I don't think there's anybody who can be at that level right now. But I think it could be pretty good. I don't know. It'd be interesting by the time he got here what that looks like. Number four, speaking of a player who's been rumored at times, reportedly was very close to going to Kansas City, which would have been a wild timeline if that had happened. Cristiano Ronaldo, Portugal. They're under the microscope here. 1-1 draw against DR Congo. They have spent the days following that, fielding questions about whether the team's got a Cristiano Ronaldo question. And the answer is yes. Francisco Conceição, he pushed back on that on Sunday. He said, we don't have any obligation or need to pass the ball to him. And then he probably had a whole bunch of people in his social media mentioned saying, pass the ball to Cristiano. They knew that was going to happen. It shouldn't affect the players anymore. It shouldn't be something that bothers them. But just the fact that we're still doing the same conversation that we did in the last World Cup about him making the team worse. He's going to make the team worse now than he did 3.5 years ago because he's 3.5 years older. And he's not playing in a league that is going to test him in the Saudi Pro League. It's just not at the same level. And a lot of people wanted to take a lot of shots at Major League Soccer when Lionel Messi came here. His level looks just fine. Rodrigo De Paul's pass to him to set up the first goal looked just fine. The Saudi Pro League is not the same level. It's not even close. And Ronaldo doesn't look like he's on the level to help this Portugal team, which is extremely talented. How does Roberto Martinez handle it? From what he said, he's not going to do anything different. And I think that's going to be to Portugal's detriment. We'll see. We'll see how it comes together. They play Uzbekistan in their second group stage game. All right, three things that make me smile. I mean, number one, duh, Cabo Verde. 500,000 people, 2 matches into their first World Cup. They haven't lost yet. The thing that is still maybe the most impressive for me about Cabo Verde is the fact that they only have committed 5 fouls in the tournament, because they've defended a lot. And usually when you defend a lot, you commit fouls. 5 fouls, the fewest of any team in the tournament who's played 2 games. Wild. Wild scenario. They should beat Saudi Arabia. They got to take care of business. And look, they're in a different position now, because it's one thing when you play the underdog, it's another where you're kind of looked at as the favorite in this game against Saudi Arabia. I think what will help them is the Saudis won't play like an underdog. They will play pretty wide open. And they have something to play for too, because they could get out of the group stage. Number two on the headlines, Spain and their quality today. I mean, the goals from Oyarzabal, the opening goal from Yamal, seeing so many Lamine Yamal jerseys. I mean, this is a kid who's 18, as Egypt tried to add another goal, but it got blocked. And that could come back to hurt them when you talk about goal difference. Lamine Yamal is 18 years old. He turns 19 soon. There were, I mean, I'm just, this is absolutely anecdotal guess. I think about 2/3 to 3/4 of the Spain jerseys I saw, which was a lot of them in Atlanta over the last 2 Spain matches, were Lamine Yamal jerseys. So for somebody to be that young, to be a face of American Eagle, which had never had a soccer player be a featured promoter for them, and he is now, it's wild. And so, like, you could just feel the buzz whenever he touched the ball early in the game. Like, he's got that. But there were so many other things that made Spain so good today. This is a Spain team that what we saw today looked like a team that can make a run. Now, Saudi Arabia is not the level of talent as in Uruguay in game 3. And it's not a France, Argentina, England. It's not any of those. So you're going to have to keep raising the level. But Spain looked like the team that we thought they would be coming in. That was good to see. And number three on things that make me smile, I think what we've seen around these games in Atlanta and the FIFA Fan Festival reports tonight say that they have had over 250,000 people at the FIFA Fan Festival since it opened on the first day of the tournament. That's amazing. The spectacle around the stadium, the spectacle around South Downtown, around Centennial Yards, the fan marches, the fans from all over the world who I think have come to our city, enjoyed it, and will come back. It's what the Olympics did for this city. It's what this World Cup can do. It's what happens on Wednesday when Morocco and Haiti come to play. There's a lot of storylines there. We'll be talking about them all week long. Then Uzbekistan and DR Congo to close out the group stage games, which I think that one will be an elimination game. So two big games coming up with a lot of cool storylines. We'll be talking about it all week. 10 o'clock tomorrow night, 10 o'clock Tuesday, Wednesday, and then Thursday, we'll have a special 2-hour, 8 to 10 U.S. Men's National Team pregame show. Thanks for hanging out with me on a Sunday evening. Hopefully you've enjoyed all of the World Cup action up to this point. We're not even halfway done. Plenty more to come. Adios, everybody.
Life can feel overwhelming, but on my podcast, From the Heart with Rachel Braithen, we're in it together. Every Friday brings you a new story. Listen to From the Heart with Rachel Braithen wherever you get your podcasts.